Welcome to Money is Freedom, a podcast exploring how finance and freedom connect in our lives. Created from thoughtful research and narrated by Notebook LM AI, this series brings you clear, meaningful insights into finance and beyond. In episode 31 of Money is Freedom podcast, we delve into the concept of fiscal dominance and its implications for global economies. Fiscal dominance occurs when government debt levels and fiscal policies significantly influence monetary policy decisions, potentially leading to higher inflation and interest rates. We explore how governments can proactively manage debt to maintain market confidence and ensure economic stability.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We're diving into some pretty intense stuff today, macroeconomics and finance. But don't worry, we're going to break it all down so you don't have to be a Wall Street whiz to understand what's going on.
Sounds good to me.
It's all about how government actions are shaping the markets, like in ways we haven't seen in decades, you know?
Definitely.
We're talking about big shifts, big changes. Our guide for this deep dive is this article from Crypto Daily. It's called The New Era of Fiscal Dominance.
Interesting title.
It really gets into it, like why the Fed hit pause on rate cuts, what's happening to our savings with all this crazy government borrowing, even how venture capital is being shaken up.
So basically, this article is pointing to a major power shift in the financial world.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
Well, for a long time, the Federal Reserve, you know, the Fed, they've been calling the shots, the monetary policy, but now it's different.
How so?
Government spending and borrowing are taking center stage. It's what economists call fiscal dominance.
Yeah, fiscal dominance. That sounds kind of intimidating.
It can be. It basically means that government spending and borrowing are now driving the economic bus instead of the Fed.
So the Fed's lost control.
In a way, yeah. It's like, imagine the economy is a car.
Okay. I like this analogy.
For years, the Fed's been the one at the wheel, you know, controlling the speed and direction with interest rate policies. But now.
What now?
The government, with its massive spending plans, it's like they're slamming on the gas pedal.
And the Fed's just trying to hold on.
Exactly. And we're already seeing the impact. You know, persistent inflation, the Fed's recent pause on rate cuts.
Right, right. It's all evidence of this power shift, this fiscal dominance thing.
Right. And, you know, the article actually compares the situation to the 1970s.
The 1970s, not exactly known for economic stability.
Not really. That decade saw a lot of inflation and market volatility because of similar policies.
And they say the U.S. fiscal deficit is even worse today.
Much worse.
Yeah.
Which means even if the Fed tries to lower interest rates, those long-term rates, the ones that affect mortgages, business loans,
they're probably going to stay high.
Most likely. It's like the government's borrowing so much money that it's creating this upward pressure on interest rates.
No matter what the Fed does.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. So that's one piece of the puzzle. What else does this article highlight?
Well, it also dives into this thing called the reverse repo facility.
The reverse repo facility.
It's basically a tool that the Fed uses to manage how much money is circulating in the market. Think of it like a giant piggy bank.
Oh, a giant piggy bank for who?
For financial institutions. They park their extra cash there.
Got it. So what's happening with this piggy bank?
Oh, it used to be overflowing, like over $2.3 trillion.
Seriously?
But now it's practically empty.
Empty. Wow. Okay. Why does that matter?
Because it means the U.S. Treasury now has to go directly to the markets to borrow money. That can pull liquidity away from other places, like the stock market, even crypto.
Oh, no. That doesn't sound good.
It can lead to higher long-term interest rates and even more instability.
So it's like the government's competing with everyone else for money.
You got it.
Wow.
And then there's this whole concept of inflationary deleveraging.
Inflationary deleveraging. That sounds a bit counterintuitive. Usually when you think about getting rid of debt, deleveraging, you think prices would fall, right?
You would, but that's not what's happening. The article argues that we're seeing the opposite.
So instead of a sale at the store, things are getting more expensive.
Basically, the government is borrowing so much that it's increasing the amount of money in circulation.
Right.
And when you have more money chasing the same amount of goods and services, you get inflation.
Okay. I'm starting to see the problem here. So we've got the government driving up interest rates, draining liquidity, and potentially fueling inflation.
It's a lot.
What can anyone do about it?
Well, there's this other thing the article points out. The Fed is quietly restructuring its balance sheet.
What does that mean?
Instead of holding a lot of long-term bonds, they're switching to more short-term T-bills.
So they're like rearranging things behind the scenes?
Exactly. It's all about giving the Treasury some breathing room to refinance its debt without officially restarting quantitative easing.
Quantitative easing? That's like printing more money, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. So they're trying to avoid that. It's a delicate balancing act.
Yeah.
And it's making a lot of investors nervous.
I bet. All right. We've covered a lot already. Fiscal dominance, disappearing liquidity, inflation on the rise. I'm starting to get a little worried about my own wallet here.
I hear you. It's a lot to take in. But that's what this deep dive is for, understanding the forces that are shaping the financial world so we can make informed decisions.
You know what? Before we move on to part two, where we'll explore how all of this is impacting venture capital and private equity, any last thoughts for our listener?
I think the big takeaway here is that we're in uncharted territory. This new era of fiscal dominance, it's changing the rules of the game. What worked in the past might not work now. And that's why it's so important to understand these trends.
Right. Okay. Well said. So folks, stay tuned because it's only going to get more interesting from here. Okay. So we've established things are getting a little crazy in the world of macroeconomics.
A little bit, yeah.
But what really got me thinking was this whole 1970s playbook thing from the article.
Oh, yeah.
The idea that we might be repeating some of the same economic mistakes that happened back then.
It's a comparison. Worth considering.
For sure.
The 1970s were a pretty turbulent time. High inflation, sluggish economic growth.
Not a good mix.
Not at all. And what's worrying is many of the same ingredients are present today.
Like what?
Well, the article talked about how back in the 70s, the U.S. government was spending heavily on things like the Vietnam War.
Social programs.
Right, right. And that combined with loose monetary policy.
From the Fed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It really fueled inflation.
Yeah.
And just like back then, we have global events adding fuel to the fire.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
In the 70s, it was the oil crisis. Sent energy prices through the roof.
Right. Makes sense.
Today, you've got the war in Europe, supply chain disruptions, rising commodity prices.
Like a recipe for disaster.
It really is. It's creating this inflationary pressure cooker that we're all stuck in.
The article mentions that the Fed made some pretty big blunders back then.
Oh, yeah.
Cutting interest rates too soon.
Which just made inflation worse.
Exactly. And then they had to hike rates again to fight the rebound.
It caused a ton of market volatility.
It's like they were stuck in this back and forth band.
Increasing the risks of something called stagflation.
Stagflation, that's the economic boogeyman.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like the economic equivalent of getting stuck in quicksand.
Ooh, that's a good one.
You've got high inflation eating away at your purchasing power.
Right.
Slow economic growth, making it harder to find jobs. And then high unemployment, adding to the misery.
Yikes. Okay, so are we doomed? Are we headed straight for stagflation?
Well, nobody can predict the future.
Yeah.
But the article makes this critical point.
Okay, what's that?
The U.S. fiscal deficit today is far worse than it was in the 1970s.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, which means those long-term interest rates, they're likely to stay high, even if the Fed tries to intervene.
So even if they pump the brakes, the economy might still overheat.
That's the worry. And those higher interest rates make it more expensive for businesses to borrow money, invest, create jobs.
Right. It impacts everyone.
Exactly. Higher interest rates on mortgages, car loans, everything becomes more expensive.
Right.
It can really put a damper on spending and slow down the whole economy.
It's like we're caught in this loop. The government needs to borrow more money.
Right.
But that borrowing pushes up inflation, which could lead to stagflation.
Yeah.
The Fed is stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
Trying to manage this whole mess.
It's a delicate situation.
Right.
But understanding these historical parallels and these potential risks is crucial. We need to adapt to this new reality.
So how do we do that? Does the article offer any advice?
It does. It emphasizes holding assets that generate cash.
Okay.
Diversifying into things like gold and Bitcoin.
Right.
And basically bracing for more volatility.
Okay. What else? What else should we be talking about?
One strategy that's often overlooked is focusing on companies that have pricing power.
Pricing power? What does that mean?
It means in an inflationary environment, the companies that can raise prices without losing customers.
Right.
They're in a much stronger position. They can maintain their profitability even as costs rise.
So I'm guessing we're talking about companies with strong brands, unique products or services, a really loyal customer base.
Exactly. Think about those brands.
Yeah.
They're so ingrained in our lives, we don't even think twice about paying a little extra.
Okay. So that's one strategy. What else?
Well, there are also sectors that actually benefit from inflation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For example, energy, commodities, and real estate.
They often perform well when prices are rising.
They do. Think about it. If the price of oil goes up, energy companies make more money.
Right. Makes sense. But how does real estate fit into this?
Well, as inflation pushes up the cost of building materials and labor, the value of existing properties tends to rise as well.
Oh, I see.
Plus, landlords can often adjust rents to keep pace with inflation.
So instead of fearing inflation, some investors actually seek it out.
They do, because it benefits certain parts of their portfolio.
Interesting. Okay, so we've got companies with pricing power, and sectors that benefit from inflation. Anything else?
And finally, in a world as unpredictable as this one, being nimble and adaptable is crucial.
Oh, for sure.
The economic landscape can change quickly, and you need to be prepared to adjust your portfolio.
So don't be afraid to make changes. Reevaluate. Stay informed.
Exactly. Don't panic when markets dip.
Right.
But don't chase the hype when they surge either.
Right.
Do your research. Understand the risks. And remember, this is a long game.
This has been a wild ride through the world of fiscal dominance and its potential consequences.
It has. Before we jump to part three, any final words of wisdom for our listeners?
You know, in times like these, knowledge really is power.
I like that.
By understanding the forces at play in the economy, you can make better decisions about your financial future.
Okay. Good advice.
And remember, it's okay to question conventional wisdom, challenge assumptions, seek diverse perspectives, and don't be afraid to think for yourself.
Love that. We'll be back in part three to explore how this new economic reality is impacting the world of venture capital and private equity. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. So we've talked about how government spending and borrowing are shaking things up, creating this whole new economic landscape. But what does it mean for startups and innovation? That's where venture capital and private equity come in, right?
You got it. This new era of fiscal dominance, it's having a massive impact on how startups get the funding they need and how investors are making decisions. You know, the article pointed out that venture capital funding has dropped dramatically.
Yeah, they said it went from $320 billion in 2021.
Down to just $180 billion in 2024. And private equity, similar declines.
That's a huge drop. I'm guessing those higher interest rates we talked about and that crowding out effect, they're playing a big role here.
They are. It's definitely a tougher environment for startups to get funding. The days of easy money are over. You know, when startups could raise millions just with a flashy pitch deck.
And a promise of future growth.
Yep. Those days are gone. Investors are being a lot more cautious now.
I bet.
They want to see companies with strong fundamentals, a clear path to profitability, and something that can handle any economic storm. A competitive edge.
So it's not just less money going around.
Right.
The investors who are still giving money, they're a lot more picky now. It's the venture capital landscape is going through its own version of natural selection.
I like that. And it's forcing both entrepreneurs and investors to adapt. The article highlighted some trends showing who's winning and losing in this new environment.
Okay. Well, let's start with the winners. Who's doing well in this new fiscal dominated world?
Sectors like AI, deep tech, and energy. They're attracting a lot of investment because they've got huge long-term growth potential and a certain resilience that's attractive right now. With all this economic uncertainty, investors are betting on these sectors to drive innovation and make money, even if the broader economy slows down.
AI, deep tech, energy. Those do sound like pretty good bets. AI is transforming so many industries, and deep tech is tackling some of the world's biggest problems. Plus, the world always needs energy, right? It's like investing in the future, even if the present is a bit shaky.
You got it. And then there's venture debt. It's actually becoming really popular because it's a way for startups to access capital without giving up as much equity.
Wait, so it's like a loan, but specifically for startups?
Exactly. It's a good strategy when funding is tight because it helps companies reach profitability without giving up too much control. Plus, venture debt often comes with warrants or options.
Oh, so the lender can also benefit if the company takes off.
Yep. It's a win-win.
Okay, so we've got the sectors that are attracting investment and this rise in venture debt. What about the other side? Who's having a harder time getting funding these days?
The article mentioned unprofitable unicorns, consumer startups, and leveraged buyouts. They're all facing some big challenges.
Okay, let's break those down. What exactly is an unprofitable unicorn? That's mythical.
It does, doesn't it? Basically, these are companies that reach billion-dollar valuations based on fast growth and grabbing market share, but they haven't figured out how to make a profit.
Investors used to be fine with that, though, right?
They were, back when it was all about growth at all costs. But those days are gone. Profitability matters now.
So the focus has shifted. It's not grow at all costs anymore. It's more like, show me the money.
Exactly. And then you've got consumer startups. A lot of them rely on discretionary spending. Those purchases we make when we have some extra cash.
Right.
But when the economy weakens and inflation eats into our budgets, those are often the first things to go.
So I'm thinking things like those subscription boxes that send you random things every month, trendy clothing brands, all those on-demand services we got so used to during the pandemic.
You got it. Those are likely the first to struggle when people start tightening their belts.
And then we have leveraged buyouts.
LBOs, yep.
Where private equity firms use borrowed money to buy companies.
Right. But higher interest rates make those deals a lot more expensive, so their potential returns go down.
So it really sounds like this new era, this fiscal dominance thing, it's separating the winners from the losers, the companies with strong fundamentals, a clear path to profit, and a bit of resilience. They're the ones getting the investment. And those that relied on easy money and hype, they're facing a much harder road.
That's a great way to put it. It's all about being able to adapt and being resilient. For both entrepreneurs and investors, you gotta be able to roll with the punches.
If funding is getting harder to find and more selective, does that mean innovation will suffer? Will we see fewer groundbreaking ideas and new technologies? Because the money just isn't there.
That's a good question and a valid concern. But I think innovation will always find a way. What we're seeing now is a shift in focus, not a decline in innovation itself. Investors are now prioritizing companies that are solving real problems, creating value, and building businesses that will last.
It's like a reality check for the startup world. Instead of chasing the next shiny object,
right,
investors are looking for solutions that will make a difference and have a lasting impact.
Exactly. It's forcing everyone to think more about the long term. And that's not a bad thing.
This has been an incredible look into the world of fiscal dominance. We've covered a lot. The impact on interest rates and inflation, the shifts happening in venture capital and private equity.
It's a lot to think about.
It is. Before we wrap up, any final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with?
In a world with so much information, it's more important than ever to stay informed and to question assumptions. Don't just accept things at face value. You know, dig deeper, ask questions. Form your own conclusions. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to navigating the financial world.
That's great advice. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into fiscal dominance. We hope you found it insightful, and we hope you feel empowered to make informed decisions about your financial future. Until next time, stay curious, keep learning, and remember, you have the power to navigate these changes.